It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Perfect. Thank you.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska named three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at all the usual spots, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Recent episodes have included, Nick Hexum of 311, Louise Post, Veruca Salt, actor Jason Scott Lee talking about the 30th anniversary of Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. We had Esty Haim on here from Haim talking about being the executive music producer of the Disney Plus and Hulu series called A Small Lights. We also talked to Daughter, the cast of Outlander, country star Carly Pierce. We had Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age, Dave Davies of the Kinks, the band Inhaler, Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam, and the cast of City on Fire on Apple TV Plus. Those are just recent episodes here on the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Bruno Major. We're going to be talking about his new record. It's called Columbo. And first, we'll hear about his comparisons to wearing his influences of Billy Joel, Leonard Cohen, and Randy Newman on his sleeve, and also taking some inspiration from Queen's Brian May and Pink Floyd's David Gilmour. Bruno's going to go on to talk about how he feels the pandemic really robbed him of some of his career momentum and how that period of writing was especially hard as he found himself dealing with paranoia and depression. He's also going to tell us why he thinks AI, artificial intelligence, is the most important discovery since fire and the will. And on the lighter side, we'll hear how his classical background finds its way into the album as well. All that and more as we discuss the album Columbo. It's Kyle Meredith with Bruno Major.
Hi, Kyle. Nice to meet you too. Is that a real spot you've got there, or is that
this is all real. This is.
Oh, okay. I thought it might be some kind of green screen situation.
Yeah, but... yeah. I've got two sets. This is my office, and I've got one at home. And I sort of found it by accident. The posters and the cornering really works. And just, you know, you surround yourself with your heroes, and suddenly it does a little bit of the lifting having them behind me, honestly, of gaining an artist's trust. That's what I found out.
Do you not feel the unbearable weight of your forefathers.
They're all cheering me on, is what it is.
Yeah, I went to jazz college, and one of the guys that taught me actually gave up making jazz music, recorded jazz music, because he couldn't handle the pressure of the weight of the great musicians that had come before him. I don't know if that applies to, you know, this situation as well.
See, that's the reason why I'm not a musician. In all, like, you know, because I played when I was younger, and it was like, you know what? I can never be as good as any of these people. They've done all the stuff that I love. I'm just going to ask the questions. That's it. But
I know exactly what you mean. I kind of have that as well. I think I'm just arrogant enough to think that maybe I will make something that good. Like, I always compare myself to the greatest, like Billy Joel, Leonard Cohen, like Randy Newman. I'm just like, if I don't get there, I'll be severely upset. And obviously it's a lofty challenge, but you got to try your best, haven't you?
But that's the compliments, because you're someone who, thank God, believed in themselves and thought exactly that maybe you can, because this record Columbo is so good. I shouldn't have been surprised, because I like what you did before, but sinking into this with just like the very first listen and going, oh, this is exactly what I want to hear right now. And, you know, those artists come up, Billy Joel, Leonard Cohen, like you'd sort of hear your influences a little bit here and there. And maybe that's on purpose. You know, you don't seem to run from it anyway.
No, I mean, I don't believe you should. And I mean, some of my greatest influences wear their influences on their sleeve. Like, I mean, Tom Waits, for example, when he first came out, people chastised him as a Randy Newman ripoff. And, you know, it's not hard to see where, I mean, like the Beatles wrote songs as in the style of Woody Guthrie, in the style of the Beach Boys. And I think art is always a product of its environment. And you should be proud of that. And you should respect the fact that the music that you make wouldn't come from, wouldn't be able to exist unless it had, you'd paid your debts to the pantheon that existed before you were making the art. So, you know, I doff my hat to those people that I learned from.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Bruno Major.
So then, I should say the most surprising thing when we get into this record is Queen. The guitar parts are obviously, I say obviously, I'm going to take a projecting is what I'm doing. They remind me a lot of Queen. The vocal layering reminds me a little bit of Queen. And then you start off the record with a song called The Show Must Go On. It's very Queen, you know, it's like, what was, as we're talking about influences, was that one for this record? Was it an obvious one? Is that something you leaned into?
I actually had no idea that there was a song called The Show Must Go On until I'd made the song. But yeah, I mean, I was a guitar player before I was a songwriter. So a lot of my musical influences come directly from the guitar. For example, Queen, my influence was Brian May as a guitar player. Pink Floyd, my influence was David Gilmour. And so I think I'm just allowing myself, you know, it took a long time when I became a songwriter. It took a long time to, figure out a way of allowing my guitar playing to shine through in an honest way without it feeling like I've written a song, here's some guitar to put on the top. This is really the first album where it almost feels like all of that stuff has kind of come through and osmosized into the songwriting, and it all feels like one broad stroke kind of paintbrush move. But yeah, there's definitely, I mean, Brian May's like one of the greatest of all time. And I love, like, I come from classical music via jazz. And like, I just love how composed his solos are. It's like, they're like Chopin nocturnes on top of rock music, which is definitely something I've taken inspiration from.
I think, you know, for a lot of artists, you know, it's hard to say who a favorite band is or something or whatever, because I like to think of it as like, maybe if I have a favorite band, I don't know, but I definitely have bands that I listen to more than any other. You know, REM's over my shoulder, and there's probably not a week that goes by. Tom Waits is another one. I listen to Tom all the time. But Queen, I remember getting into, like, you know, you get into a Queen mood and you discover Queen at whatever part in your life, and I just never came out of that. You know, like, that's still one of the ones that I hit. Is there an era or an album that you find yourself going to more often with them?
I mean, it's really embarrassing, but I think the only Queen album that I've got is the Greatest Hits one that everyone's got, which is like the most best, isn't it, like the best-selling CD of all time or something. But I mean, look, I don't like, I've had from people that have listened to this, I've had people say, oh, it reminds me of Queen, it reminds me of Elton John, reminds me of the Beatles. I at no point did I intentionally reference anything. It was really just, I wrote all of the songs with a notepad and a guitar. And once all the writing was done, I had all the lyrics and all the chords and, you know, the songs were fully formed. That was in Los Angeles, and I went to London and recorded it. And it was just like, I just did it. I didn't think about it. I didn't question. I just allowed everything to flow as freely as it could. And like at the end of it, I sort of looked at it and was like, oh, it sounds like that. So yeah, the influences are there. But like, any sort of like, any musical references are definitely unintentional, as hard as that may be to believe.
No, not hard to believe at all, because it does, you know, and to be fair, everything happens so seamless. And I think that's what I was trying to say at the beginning of this. And you even sort of got there a bit, is, you know, saying that it's not just a guitar solo dropped in. I mean, the way it sweeps up, and I could, you know, the very first single, We Were Never Really Friends. I mean, everything happens sort of like a movement, since we're talking classical music as well, but not in any jarring state. Like it's almost like I don't realize that I'm there until it's already happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that song, I'm really proud of that one. It's one of those ones that has everything that gets me excited about music. So there's like the poetry, I think the lyrics are maybe some of my best. And then like the music, it's like, it kind of, it sounds simple, and then there are like three different key changes in it, and it all merges together. And it's also got this like open, like wine glass, like basically like I was imagining songs that my mum would sing when she's drunk at 3 a.m. in the kitchen. It's like if it could pass that aesthetic test, then it could go on the album.
That's a nice bar to set right there. Yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Bruno Major.
Maybe on the heavier side of things, you know, since we've just met each other, let's, you know, get further into the deep end here, because even reading about you talking about the recording of this record, so a couple quotes. You said, I lost my mind and found it again. You also said at some point, making this album made me understand why Van Gogh cut his ear off. Like, I don't know. I hope you don't mind me asking, but what is the story of this record, of leading up?
I mean, it was a very specific time in my life. It was, you know, COVID happened, and I think we all lost our minds a little bit during that period of time. I think as an artist, I found it very difficult because, as I said, art is a product of its environment, and I felt starved of life, and I felt starved of experience. And it was strange because I had all these tours booked and this universe that was meant to happen, and then it sort of got, you know, it was like a train track, somebody just changed the signal and we went off to on a different rail track path, and like I would get to a certain date, it was like, oh, November the 8th 2020, I was meant to be playing in whatever, New York, and it was almost like I could see the other version of my life that was meant to happen. And like, you know, the version of myself that I'd imagined myself to be, this like, you know, musician who was traveling around the world and being successful and being a rock star, like, and instead I was at home in Northampton at my parents' house eating ham sandwiches and like, you know, trying to do workouts in a garden and stuff. And it was so bizarre. And I basically didn't write anything for that period of time. And then, you know, because of so much of my identity is put into my artistic endeavors, I was like, well, if I'm not that guy and I'm not playing that gig and I'm not writing that song and I'm not being the this amazing version of my invented self, like, who the fuck am I? And I, you know, figuring out who I was and suffering a real ego death. I know that's a cliche phrase, but I really felt that. It was like, I need to figure out who I am when I'm not being who I want to be. So anyway, as soon as the travel ban was lifted, I got on the first plane over to Los Angeles and like immediately imbibed everything. I drank all the drinks. I took all the whatevers. I loved all the loves. I felt all the feelings. I went and bought this old Mercedes SL and like drove it around and wind in my hair and like just felt like for the first time in however long it had been, I was like, I have my autonomy back. I have my freedom back, and I have the choices to go where I want and do what I want. And all of a sudden, you know, these songs just exploded out of me. And it was like the most prolific period of that 6 months post COVID was the most prolific period of writing I've ever had. And I just like promised myself, I was like, fuck, I didn't realize that how special it was to be able to be free and to be able to write songs, because that got taken away from all of us. And I was like, I just decided that I would engage with it and follow it as far as I could go. And, you know, going into, sorry, this is a very long answer, but like going into that creative realm is like going into the upside down in the Stranger Things. It's a different place. It's a dream world where you're existing almost in your subconscious. And I think the longer you spend in there, the further detached from your conscious mind and from reality you become. And it's like you're in a fishing boat, and the farther you go out into the sea, the bigger the fish are. And the rewards are greater, but the further away from shore you get, and the harder it is to get back. And at one point, you know, I definitely lost my marbles. I remember being at like some like somebody's house that I'd met on a night out and stayed over, and then like got an Uber back and convinced myself that I was being kidnapped by the Uber driver, and had to like ring my manager to come and pick me up by the side of the fucking highway at 4 a.m. Like I was completely unstable at that point in time. And I think that like if I'd stayed in that realm forever, maybe that is why Van Gogh cut his ear off. Maybe that's why like Sanson or whoever it was discovered with like 1,000 umbrellas in a room when he died and only ever ate foods that were like the color of white. Like there's a reason why like artists are crazy. I definitely have come out of that realm now and I'm fine. But like this album is my favorite album I've ever made, so the rewards are great. Yeah.
And you've seen it. I mean, you've seen that side of things. You know that side of yourself. You've been in that world. Like, and would you do it again?
I don't know. I've always imagined that I would make 4 albums, and I feel like this one nearly killed me. And I would really like to do another one, but I'm a bit scared. I'm definitely a bit scared that I'll come out of album 4 with one in here. Yeah.
Why 4?
Because it takes a lot of you, man. I mean, I was pretty fucked after this, after I made this album. It took me a few months to like kind of recover. You know, have you read Harry Potter? You know how he makes the Horcruxes? Like inanimate objects, and he puts bits of his soul in order to achieve immortality. Like, that is literally what you do as an artist. Like, I read an interview with a cellist the other day. He was talking about like Beethoven is immortal, and you can still hear his soul, and you can still hear the soul of Mozart and Chopin. It's like true, because they've immortalized themselves through their art by virtue of giving a piece of their soul to the world. And I do feel like in a very real way, there's a real piece of my soul has been taken out of me and put into this body of work. And yeah, I don't know how many times it's possible to do that before you become a shell of your former self forever. But maybe I'm being dramatic. I'll probably be fine.
I love thinking of that, though, the soul thing. There's another thing that I've you know, talked about here with artists before, because there's this whole thing where if you've ever been played, let's say, on the radio, and you know, it's gone out over the FM signals, those FM signals never stop. they continue through the universe forever and ever. So long after you're gone, your voice is still traveling just somewhere out in the ethers, something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, reading some of the stuff that you've talked about, you know, for what you are singing about on the album, I was almost surprised, like, you know, simulation theory, AI, immortality, if we're talking about that. I was like, I never felt like that creeped up much on the record. You seem like you're, you know, I don't know if like sci-fi is not the right word because it's reality.
There's a reference to the simulation. I think Tears in Rain, is it all a simulation? Can you win the human race? Can you even hear me? Are you stardust out in space?
That's what's got my eye right now. I was like finding, you know, some of the other folks that are kind of watching that as well.
Dude, it's, I believe that it is our purpose to create AI. And I believe that the earth is the womb and we are the plankton and consciousness is the end goal of everything. And like, we are limited by our monkey brains and our mortality. And as soon as we manage to extract sentience and consciousness and place it into superior beings, that will be the expansion of enlightenment and like the future of consciousness. And we are in the moment now where the universe is waking up, and AI is literally an extension of ourselves. It's the universe experiencing itself. It's the universe waking up for the first time. It's fucking crazy. AI, in my opinion, AI is more important than fire, more important than the wheel. It's more important than the written word. It is the greatest invention ever created by humankind.
It's that thought too. I mean, implanting, because if you can implant your consciousness in something, as we've seen in science fiction, which always seems to be the great prophets, you know, our science fiction writers, because they think it up and then we all create that. I mean, it's self-fulfilling prophecy a lot of the time with a lot of this, but if you're able to put your consciousness in something, at that point, that's pretty much immortality though, right? You know, in a different version than even what we've talked about before.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know if I believe in the idea of self. I think self is an illusion. And I don't believe that like there is any point in like maintaining an immortal version of a singular piece of consciousness. That's just your like selfish gene talking. You know, AI will probably most likely be one consciousness. And I believe that there is only ultimately one consciousness, and like you and I are the same. And when we die, we will reassimilate back into like the wider universal consciousness. And we ultimately don't matter.
And that's, bringing it back around, is what I'd call a strange kind of beautiful. It is. I mean, I love hearing that stuff. I do. And not to get too far out of that, because we do have an album to talk about. By the way, that song, A Strange Kind of Beautiful, is a beautiful song. And as we talk about musically, you know, this world, I mean, that's where classical meets current, musically speaking, for you. Is that right?
Yeah, very much so. I listen to a lot of Bach in general. And that the harmonic movement of that feels like a Bach chorale or a fugue. And there's obviously like that, the reference to the fugue in the synth solo, which is kind of like a little two-part Bach fugue. And then there's the lyric, a Chopin impromptu that nobody heard but him, which was me. The idea of the whole song really started out of that. The thought that like one day Chopin probably went out to the pub and got drunk, came back to his flat or house or whatever and sat at the piano and played the most amazing thing that anyone has ever played, because it's fucking Frederick Chopin, right? And that's it. It's gone forever. Only Chopin heard that. Imagine the dope shit that Chopin played that we never got to hear. And the only way he could permanize his music was by writing it down And, you know, and something would have necessarily been lost in translation, which I think is so beautiful. But yeah, the piano part, I guess, was me attempting to write something that Chopin may have written. I think I got it wrong and it sounds more like Beethoven, but there you go.
I absolutely love the record, and it is, and it's fun, and it's beautiful, and it's exciting, and it's adventurous, and it's got just kind of everything that I want out of an album.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah, seriously, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. I really appreciate it.
Oh, dude, thank you so much. I mean, I feel like we spent most of the time talking about the evolution of consciousness, but, you know, that is ultimately what the album is about, so there you go.
My thanks to Bruno Major. The new album is called Columbo. And thanks to you for checking out the episode in the series. Again, please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. You do that, you get 3 new interviews sent your way every single week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify and Apple Podcast, at npr.org, wfpk.org, or of course, YouTube for the video versions. Anywhere you get your podcasts from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And after that, do me a favor. Head over at any point, actually, to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday. Starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. I play lots of old songs and lots of new songs. We celebrate some anniversaries. You get lots of music news and, of course, bonus interviews. In fact, a recent show had me spinning some favorites from the Ramones and Sonic Youth, Soundgarden, Mike Doty, The White Stripes, Simon & Garfunkel, Sheryl Crow, The Cranberries, Big Audio Dynamite, Madonna, Gotta Buy Voices, Morrissey, Run the Jewels, Fiona Apple, and my interview with Les Claypool of Primus. That was just a recent show that you could hear at WFPK.org. Again, 6 p.m. every weekday. You can also head over to Consequence to get your music and film news. And, of course, find me on the social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All 3 of them, the address is at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Thank you so much, Kyle. Bye.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.